This is Dan Barish, the Jewish liberal from Cleveland.
And this is Matt Shepard, the conservative Mormon from Seattle.
And we are the common ground. So,
and this week we're going to be talking about trigger words. So things that conservatives say that kind of tick off or touch off the liberals and vice versa.
Yes. So, and to me, this gets to the root of why we began this podcast project in the first place, which is that we as liberals and conservatives talk past each other, often no longer sharing a common vocabulary. And so we're trying to help each other understand these things, basically.
Yeah, so understand what, you know, what conservatives hear when liberals say things like gun control. Now, you want to start us off, Dan?
Okay, so a big liberal trigger word is family values. So when we as liberals hear family values, we take it as an umbrella for conservative, for social conservatism, not fiscal conservatism, it's social. Or in other words, definitely anti-gay marriage, anti-gay in general, anti-feminist, anti-abortion, just a general lack of freedom, actually, for people to live the way they want to live. Because intellectually, I understand that what conservatives are talking about when they say family values is that the traditional nuclear family, a man and woman married, is an important thing. I guess that's where you're coming from.
So as a conservative, when we say family values, we mean someone where the parents love the children, they're taking care of the kids. I associated a lot with movies and establishments such as like restaurants and things that they're like, hey, we're amenable to having your kids come in and be like, I associate it with okay for kids, basically, is when I say like family values. Like, we believe in family values. It's that, you know, it's, I would feel okay showing this to my kids or being with my kids here or that sort of thing.
Okay. And interestingly, when you talk about all that stuff, I don't think of family values because the phrase is too poisonous for me. I think family friendly. If I hear that a restaurant is family friendly, it means that they understand the kids maybe run amok a little bit, that they scream, that they don't sit still, or that the movie isn't full of swear words and and nudity and people getting killed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I mean, like, that they would be somewhat similar terms in my mind.
Right. So, yeah, so when a liberal hears family values, we hear social conservative. We hear that agenda. And that agenda makes us very upset because we feel, if I can talk about us as a monolith, that love is a family value, and to be anti-gay is not loving, it's bigotry. And we feel that love comes in many forms, and a family also comes in many forms. And so that's where we're getting rubbed the wrong way, to say the least.
Yeah, I guess I can see that. The one thing that, as a conservative, like when you say gun control, what do you mean, Dan?
What do I personally mean? I mean, we shouldn't ban guns. We really shouldn't, because if nothing else, the example of prohibition demonstrates that when you ban a thing that a lot of people use, which of course in that case was alcohol, it not only did not solve the problem, it made it a lot worse because people's drinking went underground, and in the meantime, organized crime completely took it over. Crime soared.
Yeah, the 1929 was the height of prohibition. It was also the highest year for mass murders in the United States.
Actually, the interesting thing is alcohol poisoning did go down at some point. It did work in that specific way. But organized crime went crazy. So I think we shouldn't go back there, and I think we can agree on that. But anyway, when I think of gun control, I think we need to have sane legislation that somehow brings our gun problem a bit under control. But even at that same time, I'm really not sure what that legislation looks like. And part of the reason I think that is, no, well, first of all, I'm not a gun owner, but with a good friend, I've been to a range a few times, and that experience taught me a lot about firearms, how it feels to shoot one off, and also about the vocabulary of firearms. And that was when I really learned that most liberals who are very adamant about gun control don't know the first thing about how firearms work.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't know how it works, well, then how can you possibly legislate a good policy around the thing? So I think when we liberals are saying gun control, some of us are more intelligent and articulate and well-informed about this sort of thing. I haven't put a tremendous amount of time into it, to be honest. But we are at the very least flailing and thinking there must be something we can do. And since the liberal bias is that big government can solve some problems that local people cannot, it's on the onus of the government to somehow have better policies about this thing. The government should somehow solve this problem. That is liberal-style thinking. I'll very openly admit that, I think.
It's interesting, like, you talk about people that don't know what they're talking about. Like, there was Don Lemon and Michael Bloomberg had interesting interviews where they're discussing various shootings and things like that. They keep talking as if people have automatic weapons, and they don't. Like, no mass killings have used automatic weapons in decades. They use semi-automatic weapons, which means you shoot one bullet per trigger pull.
Right.
Which is not a military... The military has the M16s, which you pull the trigger once, and it fires the whole clip. And that's... You know, there's a big difference, because with one pull, you can aim and fire and shoot. You know, you can still kind of aim blindly, with it. But it's much, much more difficult to... we get why automatic weapons are basically banned across the United States. They're much more difficult to control. There's a lot more... kick issues and a number of things like that. So it's much more difficult to actually hit your target when you're not, like, really trained and physically able to handle the thing, which is why we don't really use them. I personally have a revolver.
So out of random curiosity, do you think that automatic weapons should be banned for civilian usage in the United States?
Yes.
Okay.
They basically are. And I think the current levels of usage are somewhat sufficient. Like, it's, you can go to a range that has a specific license, and they can help you, and you can fire an automatic weapon if you want. Along the same lines that you can go to a place and take a tank and run it over cars and run it through over all kinds of stuff. But that's just kind of a thrill seeker kind of thing, where you go it's in a controlled environment.
I didn't know that there were places where you could drive a tank around.
Mm-hmm. Okay. There's one in Minnesota. There's, like, a couple in, like, Tennessee, and I think.
Okay. Okay. Like, well, I guess in America we really do have everything. But anyway, let's stay on topic. Sorry about that, folks.
When you talk about guns, know what you're talking about. And, to a conservative, to a lot of the gun-toting conservatives, if you will, gun control means we want to take away all the guns, but legally we can't. So we're going to do everything we can to do that without actually taking away your guns.
And, the interesting thing is, at least me as a liberal, I don't want people's guns taken away. I just want guns only in the hands of responsible people and not used for mass killings. I think the appropriate use of a gun is to defend your home or for hunting. That's pretty much it. Or target shooting. Sorry, target shooting. Mm-hmm. That as well.
Yeah, which is about the same position as Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie and a number of other people just recently came out and said there was some gun control thing that was going on. And, Charles Barkley, they're talking about, like, look, we have guns to protect ourselves. Like, that's what they're for, is when you are threatened with deadly force, sometimes the only thing you can do to meet that is with deadly force.
Right.
But, so that's kind of what conservatives tend to hear when people use gun control.
Right. And I think it's understandable to think that they just want to shut it all down. I mean, that's how liberals react to abortion restrictions, is, We, and I certainly do, think that there's a whole bunch of conservatives whose ultimate agenda is make it completely impossible to get an abortion in the United States of America. So I can, and so that's sort of the flip-flop there, you know.
Yeah, I think that's kind of the direction I would like it to head, not making it necessarily impossible, but making it much less likely that people will. And on that note, I would love to go back to Roe versus Wade, the original allowance of abortion to the guidelines given under Roe versus Wade, because we've actually relaxed them even more since Roe versus Wade.
And I personally just think abortion should be safe, legal, and easily obtainable and rare. And I think if you want to make them hard to get, women are going to do it the hard way. They're going to go back to the coat hanger days, and they're going to do it illegally and unsafely, and there's going to be a lot of dead women. So that even if you're very, very, very so-called pro-life, you need to be pragmatic and realize if they don't have a legal way to do it, they're going to do it the wrong way.
I like the, there's a word for this, I'm struggling to find it, but the drop-off laws where you can basically just drop your baby off at a hospital, no questions asked, I think is a great thing. There are a number of, especially teenage pregnancies that are trying to hide it, that where they will go and give birth in an alleyway or something and just leave the baby in the dumpster. And that is very sad. And
oh, yeah.
Knowing
yeah.
that it's okay if you've made a mistake, honestly. Like, it's okay. Let's work through this the best way we know how to from here, as opposed
to... Right, and sometimes sometimes the best way to work through that mistake is to have the abortion. And you consider, especially on a teenage body, the physical consequences of pregnancy, all the back pain and the feet hurting and the more than that, and I mean just the physical toll that pregnancy takes on or can take on a woman. And of course it's different for every woman. Some of them throw up for the whole pregnancy, some of them throw up for a week, and
some of them don't at all.
Absolutely. Every pregnancy is different, every woman is different, just like every man is different.
Mm-hmm.
And I definitely like the idea of a safe Dropbox thing. There's countries that do that. South Korea is one of them.
There are hospitals that have that policy here in the States.
Absolutely. And so, in any case, I don't want to make this our abortion episode. That needs its own half hour. Only a half hour.
Yeah.
We can solve that problem in a half hour. We're very efficient like that. We get along, we'll make it. It'll be just fine. It'll be absolutely fine. Watch us.
Oh, I'm sure we'll see completely eye to eye and be able to understand each other. And yeah, of course.
Absolutely. At the end of the episode, I will have an abortion. Excuse me. Sorry. Couldn't tell myself.
So what's your next trigger word?
Right. Do. I think for both of us, actually, you know, we put it down as a conservative one, but I think we can sort of conclude by talking about income inequality. Or another word for you, another similar trigger for you might be redistribution.
Yes.
Even more so.
Uh-huh. Yeah, redistribution, I think, would be a little more. Although that speaks to a specific thing, so I wouldn't. It's less of a trigger word and more of a, hey, if I'm mentioning this, then that means that I have certain views on things.
Right. So where we liberals come from with income inequality is, well, people don't have equal incomes. And that, in fact, right now the gap between the rich and poor is the worst it's been since before the Great Depression. And that's not a great thing if you want societal stability and the idea that everyone really does have a fair shake in life. Among industrialized nations, the U.S. now actually has remarkably poor social mobility, which is in contrast to this notion of the American dream, that if you really work hard, if you try for what you want, then by golly, you will get it. And if you don't get it, it's because, well, clearly you didn't try.
In my head, at least a good part of that is a poor makeup of our entitlement programs and of our social safety net. Because in order to, if you are a single mother or a poor family and that sort of thing, in order to go from living completely off of welfare benefits to being better off by working, you have to jump from zero income to in the range of $50,000 to $60,000 a year, which in general does not happen.
Yeah, you generally don't just immediately make $50,000 or $60,000. That's pretty much, unless you work in perhaps software. Maybe then you could do it.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly,
or if you're a really good salesman.
Yeah.
or things of that nature would be entry level-ish jobs making that kind of money. But the entry level jobs generally do not make enough for somebody to come in and go directly from living in a poor off of welfare benefits and that sort of thing to being better off by working. And if you don't see those immediate results of I'm working, I should be doing better now. But when that the economic benefits aren't there from working, then that discourages people from working harder and becoming, and discourages a lot of behaviors that we need to be encouraging in all of society.
On the other hand, before the Great Depression, or excuse me, before the New Deal, there was almost no social safety net, and the inequalities were tremendous, if not worse than today. And so when I look at conservatives blaming the New Deal and the Great Society for our ills, I think, well, geez, before you had the New Deal, and even before that, before the progressive movement and all of the changes that those things brought, things were far worse than they are now.
I think a lot of that has to do more with the advances that capitalism has made, as opposed to the advances that the social safety net has made. But
No, I can't go there. Because, for example, look at one thing. I mean, I think that we have to acknowledge that capitalism is fundamentally psychopathic. What I mean by there is capitalism has precisely one goal, which is to make money. A corporation has exactly one job, which is to increase the worth of its shareholders. It doesn't have an innate drive to be moral, like you hope a person does. Like almost everyone has a conscience. A corporation does not innately have a conscience at all. It just has the imperative to make money. And
And
so
this is why Adam Smith's first book was about morality. So Adam Smith was the one who wrote the Invisible Hand,
right.
that kind of introduced the modern economics, capitalist economics. His first book was about morality and how we need to have a moral society. And capitalism doesn't work without morality. If that's kind of the It doesn't work nearly as well, and it doesn't work for the benefit of everyone without morality. It can work, but usually what ends up happening is you end up getting a cabal, as happens in some places in Russia and in Hong Kong, where it's basically a legal organized crime ring, is what happens when capitalism goes awry and there is no morality amongst the people.
I mean, yeah, I think that capitalism is innately amoral, but at the same time, I want to, I think maybe one myth that conservatives sort of have is that liberals like myself are socialists or bordering on it. We just want the government to take everything over. Is that about right?
There definitely are a lot of socialists and people that want communism in it. I wouldn't paint all liberals with that brush, but I do think that a number of that there is a significant movement within the liberal progressive movement that do want to move towards socialist or communist systems.
There absolutely is, and I think they're foolish. I think that they're ignoring the 20th century. I think that somehow, they just can't let go. They just can't. And some of my friends, if they listen to this, will be annoyed with me, but that's okay.
As a plug here, socialism or capital or at least communism does not work.
No. So, what I was basically going at here is I don't oppose capitalism. And this is very vague, but I'm just in support of a regulated capitalism. I believe that capitalism is the greatest force that history has ever seen to raise people up out of poverty and improve the quality of life of the people. There's no question there. But if you let it go completely unchained, you end up with horrible income inequality. And when you have enough income
And a number of
inequality,
other things. And a number of other things.
Right, and to me as a liberal, the problem with income inequality is we don't, at least I personally don't, resent innately the idea that somebody else has more money than I do. Partly because that's always going to be true, and if I'm going to get worked up about that, I'm never going to be happy. What's the point?
And in my head, it always should be true, but that's another discussion.
Or it always should be true, getting worked up that somebody has more money than I do, or what do you mean?
No, it always should be true that some people have more money than others.
Oh, because it generates the will to work.
Amongst other things.
What'd you say?
amongst other things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a parable in the Bible where Christ gives different amounts of money to different men, and some of them are able to take care of the money and to do great things with the money that he gives them. It's where there's a fictional person. It's one of his parables. Anyway, and then there's some that don't do a good job of managing it. You know, personally, if I were given $1 billion, like off the bat, I probably would have no clue what to do with it and would squander a large portion of it. A number of people, when they're given a large amount of money, don't use it for good, don't use it for their benefit, don't use it, like, a lot of times they don't even use it for their own benefit. They just don't know what to do with it, and so they will often just buy things that don't give them any happiness just because they have the money.
Right.
You know, they will, yeah, and so that's there should be an income inequality, and there, you know, it's because some of us have different capacities for being able to handle different incomes and to be able to manage and provide benefits to the customers in amounts that are, you know, lesser or greater than each other.
Right.
If you see what I'm saying.
Yes. And to me, I don't mind income inequality. My problem with it on a societal level is if it gets to be so great that you end up having a revolution or the push toward one. You know, if you have people living in dirt huts and the czar is going around in a golden carriage, you have a problem. That's the sort of thing that I'm talking about. When you look at the Romanov family jewels, as I have, or at least those that were on exhibition once in Cleveland, and the Romanov golden carriage, you know, the sorry listeners, the Romanovs were the Russian imperial dynasty that lost Russia to the communists. Well, not directly to the communists, but anyway, yes, the Russian emperors and empresses. And when you look at the opulence in which they lived, it is no surprise to you that there was a revolution, no matter your political stripe. Of course the people revolted. Look at this.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the things that that in Europe, I think part of the reason that socialism works is because of the history there. In some places, it kind of works. Is that in the history of Europe, the people that had the power were also the same people that had the money. The people that had the, you know, in America, the richest people are not the former presidents. They're not the senators, although there are some very rich senators. Like John Kerry is the richest, well, was the richest senator when he was in office. But his wealth comes from marrying a woman who made a bunch of money selling ketchup.
Well,
his family made a bunch of money selling ketchup.
She married into the Heinz family. She was not... She didn't personally have anything to do with selling ketchup, I don't think.
So it was, yeah. So it was, she married someone, divorced, got a big settlement, and then married John Kerry. But there's a number of things that go into there. But it's, in America, it has never been that the leaders among us were the wealthy people. And I think that's a good thing. It should come from the general populace, people from all walks of life, whether they're, you know, middle wealthy doctors to you know, businessmen to that sort of thing. In Britain, the merchants, you know, it's when people revolt and think that their people have too much money, it's almost never like the wealthy merchant class or the people that are delivering goods, like the capitalist made wealthy people. It's always against the wealth that's not always. You typically against the wealthy that have made their money through things such as taxes, such as the kings and czars and that sort of class. And so when they revolt, they're revolting against the feudalism, the feudalistic ideas, which never really existed here in the United States, which is, you know, an interesting thing. But, you know, I think that form of income inequality, yes, that form of income inequality should not exist. In the Book of Mormon, there's a great example of a leader named King Benjamin, who in my mind exemplifies everything that a leader should be. This King Benjamin did not tax the people almost at all. He, you know, asked, like, they went to war, they did a number of things, and he fought alongside them, and he actually worked for his own food and sustenance. And it's that's kind of the kind of thing that to me should be the way that leadership works, is that people that have made enough or are making enough to survive and can spare some time are the people that should be our temporary leaders that we elect. So is there anything else that you have to add to this, Dan?
Not at this time. So this is Dan, the Jewish liberal from Cleveland, signing off.
And this is Matt, the Mormon conservative from Seattle, and signing off.